Good morning, Chairperson, and everyone on the platform. Chair, we're correct. Shall I proceed with the roll call, Chair?
Yes, please.
Mr. Mbuyane?
Recording in progress.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. I'm present. Thank you for asking me.
Mr. Malamakia?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mwatse?
Good morning, colleagues, and good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Mr.
Morning.
Mulder? Mr. Mulder, Chair?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all. I'm present.
Good morning.
Mr. Thring?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Trust you've all had your coffee.
Enjoy yours. Good morning.
Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Chair, those are all members currently on the platform, Chair.
Thank you very much.
You join us?
Yeah.
Same procedure as last year, Chair.
Yes, same procedure as last year. Thank you. Can we have the agenda, please? Thank you very much. You're all welcome to the meeting. Can we have the apologies, Committee Secretary?
Chair, we have an apology from Prince Burns Namasha, Chair. That's the only apology I've received. That's it.
Okay. We note that apology. Can we have a move and a second for the adoption of the agenda as tabled?
Move to accept, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable String, Honourable Matse.
I stand to second in case she's battling, Chair.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Malamache. Thank you, members. So we are gathered here today to receive a briefing and to engage with the DTIC led by the Honourable Minister on the progress made in terms of the implementation of the South African Poultry Sector Master Plan, as well as any outcomes in this regard. Honourable Minister, you are welcome to our meeting. You can introduce your team and then proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to the members of the committee. Good morning also to the officials of the committee and the officials of the department that are present. My greetings also to the representatives from the stakeholders who are present. Chair, let me start perhaps just with introductions, and let me also greet Deputy Minister Gina, who is with us this morning. I'd like to introduce first the department team led by the Acting Director General, Shabir Khan. We also have the Deputy DG Nimrod Zalk and Stephen Hanneville, and Ngumisa, Shlauli, Theo Menkis, and Nikki Courier from the department. I'd like to also welcome the Deputy Commissioner of ITAC, Dumisani Mbambo, as well as Rika Tiat and Manini Masitela from ITAC. We do expect that there will be a representative from the IDC and the NEF that will also join. And then from industry, I have Isaac Breitenbach from the South African Poultry Association, Dr. Vet Boshoff from Grain and Feed, Mr. Nakana Masoka from AFASA, the African Farmers Association of South Africa. And then from organized labor, I'd like to welcome Mr. Vuka Tonku, the representative from the Food and Allied Workers Union. Chairperson, I'd like to also thank the committee for the opportunity to provide an update on the work that has been done. I see we've also been joined by Tanya van Mielis from the department, so let me also welcome her. And as is normally the procedure with these things, Chairperson, I'm going to be taking the committees through a presentation that at eye level sets out some of the progress that we've made on the poultry master plan. But I'd like to perhaps start with recognizing that this sector of the economy is important, that it's a critical source of protein for South Africans, particularly for communities across the country who would otherwise not be able to utilize the opportunities, not only as consumers, but also as producers. So it plays that very important role. And I'm glad that we have representatives of the committee, of the stakeholders that are present. Tsulu Mushi will flight a presentation, Chairperson, that will summarize the report that the department has prepared. And what the presentation does by way of the introduction is to recall that prior to 2019, the poultry industry had reported very significant loss of market share and economic hardship. They had put in an application for tariff protection for the domestic market. At the time, the new administration came in, and Minister Toko Didiza and I sat down and considered how best to deal with the challenges of the poultry industry. And we convened a meeting with a range of people in the industry, from the poultry producers to the farmers of feedstock, the importers of poultry, and the representatives of workers in the sector, together with all the regulators and development finance institutions. And we considered the underlying causes of the challenges faced by the industry. If protection was a solution, then we wanted to know what was the problem, because then we would see, is the solution appropriate, or is a different mix of measures more appropriate? Ms. Lael Bethlehem chaired a facilitated discussion that took place over a number of months. Minister Didiza and I interacted with the stakeholders quite a bit in that period. And at the end of a lengthy engagement, the parties agreed to a sector plan to address the identified challenges. And that sector plan became the Poultry Master Plan. It was signed by the private and the public sector representatives at the investment conference that took place in November of 2019. Now, what the master plan did, and we had an opportunity to highlight previously to the committee some of the elements of the master plan, so I'm not going to deal with it in a lot of detail, but essentially, it recognized that in poultry production, we have a complex global environment with a number of countries that for purpose of supporting local employment had supported the domestic poultry industry. But more significantly, the insight from those discussions was that there was a very big change globally in the poultry industry today compared, say, to 40, 50 years ago. The bird that we consume was not sold as a whole bird in most markets. that the chicken was divided into what you can call your premium meats, the meats that has an extra price that it can fetch in markets, and a discounted part, one that is sold at a lower rate than the premium parts. And basically breast meat, the meat that doesn't have bone near to it, is regarded in a number of countries as premium meat. And so what chicken producers, say for example in the European Union, would do, we were told in these facilitated discussions, is they would basically slice the chicken up, take the premium meat and sell it in high income markets, and then take the remainder of the bird, the thighs and the wings and so on, and those would then be sold or exported to other parts of the world, including South Africa. And that meant that the cost of that part of the bird was effectively discounted because the return was made by the producers on the premium meat. And so we said that for South Africa to prepare for a new future in the poultry industry, we have to deal with a greater export focus, trying to sell some of the premium meat, and in that way, bring down the cost of those cuts of the bird that are very popular in South Africa. We also looked at a range of other issues, the level of tariff protection. We had committed to a certain tariff level at the World Trade Organization, but we had reduced the actual level significantly below that. We had a free trade agreement with the European Union, which allowed duty-free export from Europe to South Africa. We looked at the grain industry, the feedstock for the sector, and we considered the structure of the industry, the fact that there were a couple of large players and that this sector is well positioned to bring many smaller farmers into the value chain. So the master plan addressed all of these and found a way of uniting the stakeholders around what needed to be done. From 2020, implementation of the master plan commitments commenced. And in that implementation period, of course, the industry was faced with COVID-19. In some parts of that period, increased feed costs, impediments such to the export of South African poultry because of the outbreak of avian flu, and significant levels of imports, mainly of what is called bone-in chicken portions. The next slide just identifies the poultry sector as one that has a regulatory spread, in the sense that there isn't one government department that deals with all of the issues of poultry farming and the value chain, the poultry value chain. So different public entities play a role in the support for the industry. Delrad is perhaps the most significant of all of the entities and departments, and they would work to promote the overall poultry industry, with a focus also on support for black farmers. They would interact with grain and feedstock producers. They would deal with certain of their health standards and compliance with what are called sanitary and phytosanitary standards in markets globally. Delrad and the IDC have also now worked together on funding. The DTIC and ITAC works on trade policy, that would be tariffs, it would be anti-dumping duties, but it would also be to prize open global markets for South African goods. The Department of Health also has some responsibility around food safety legislation. SARS plays a critical role at ports of entry, and provinces promote local poultry production. The next slide concludes the introduction. by recalling some of the key points over the last number of years, since this is going to be covered in a bit more detail in the rest of the presentation. I'm going to skip that and go to the next slide. So while we're waiting for the next slide to come up, I should indicate that the five commitments or pillars of the Poultry Master Plan speaks to the analysis of the problem. So we looked at how to expand and improve local production, how to increase consumption of poultry meat in the domestic market, focus more on exports, enhance the regulatory framework and ensure compliance with health and safety standards, with trade rules and so on. And finally, address trade measures to support the local industry. The next slide gives a brief outcome. Tariffs were increased in March 2020, providing a level of additional protection for local industry. That was the most significant immediate step that industry had wanted government to take. But we had said that if we are to consider an increase in tariffs, it must be based on actions that will improve the overall competitiveness of the domestic industry and reduce the price of meat. And so the industry committed to new investment. Total investments to date are 1.8 billion as reported by the industry, creating 1,900 additional jobs. 21 contract growers have been supported, and the industry has placed just over half a billion rand in additional investment by 2024. A new fund has been established for agro-processing firms. Dalrad, working with the Industrial Development Corporation, has established a 1 billion rand agri-industrial fund to support emerging agricultural producers, including poultry farmers. By September this year, the fund had supported 8 poultry projects valued at just under 500 million rand and creating a reported 215 jobs. The Animal Feed Manufacturers Association has reported an additional 2,000 jobs being created in the extended value chain. And the country has increased its slaughtering capacity from 19.7 million birds a week to 22.5 million birds a week. The next slide just does a quick structure of the industry from the animal feed premixes to the feed mills, to the primary breeders, the parent stock farms, the broiler chicks that are the one-day-old broiler chicks, the contract growers, the independent and small-scale farmers, the abattoirs and processing, and then the retailers on the one end and the fast food producers or retailers like KFC, McDonald's and others. And so that represents the bulk of the sector's economic footprint. The next slide just summarizes over this period that we've had the industry employing more people, and they've indicated 3,888, call it 4,000 additional jobs in the sector. And 21 contract growers have been supported. These are black contract growers that are being brought into the sector with effectively guarantees of offtake commitments. So like a procurement commitment that's given to them that they will be able to sell their product. The next slide looks at some of the steps taken to drive domestic demand from the commitment by two retailers, ShopRite Checkers and OBC, to bring more locally produced chicken into their stores, more affordable meat packs, and the work of Proudly South African to promote local poultry consumption. Next slide. Exports remain an important area of focus. We're currently exporting cooked poultry meat to Lesotho, Namibia, Botswana, Eswatini, the UAE, Ghana, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. There are challenges experienced with respect to several countries, including the European Union, the UK, and Saudi Arabia. And this is largely due to avian flu outbreaks, or that we don't yet have the inspection and other systems certified that countries are comfortable that we meet their domestic sanitary and phytosanitary standards. Industry is currently preparing information on a residue monitoring system for cooked poultry meat for the European Union and the United Kingdom. The Poultry Association indicated that this will be submitted before the end of this year, and Dalrad would then submit it to our trading partners. We exported about 50,000 tons of cooked meat in 2020. This declined slightly to 49,000 tons in 2021 due to outbreaks of avian flu. Dalrad had declared two provinces free of avian flu, Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape, the last time I checked. And the rules of origin for poultry products have now been finalized in the African Continental Free Trade Area. It requires 100% African originating content. In other words, to benefit from the tariff dispensation, it has to be African chickens produced on the continent. The next slide, slide 11, deals with some import trends. These are quarterly figures, and honorable members will see Brazil as consolidated itself. It's the most significant source of imports in South Africa, followed by the United States and other countries. I'll come back to the European story in a moment, because honorable members will see that there's really no European poultry in the very latest period. That's avian flu related. South Africa is still a large net importer of poultry, and on the one hand, that helps to maintain competition that keeps local prices in check. And we imported an enormous quantity of product, and honorable members will see the figures reflected there for in quarter 2, 2022. The next slide is work that the department has done, where the department has advised me that the information that they've looked at recently shows that the global poultry market continues to remain highly distorted. And their concern has been that many markets export chicken to South Africa at lower prices than they do to the rest of the world, with the result that domestic South African poultry producers, they say, are not able to compete. Local industry is, of course, essential to cushion consumers from price inflation, as well as to provide stability in sourcing. If there are disruptions in global supply chains, countries want to have food security. They want to know that they're not completely dependent on global value chains. And so while on the one hand, import competition plays a role in the market, the department has emphasized that local producers can only compete against fairly priced imports. And in the table, they provided information that they indicate shows price differences. For example, in Brazil, that export prices to South Africa are significantly lower than the average export prices to the rest of the world, and they've done that for different places. That's really just information provided by the department. They look from time to time at different dynamics in the sector, and particularly we've done work in the past on areas like steel, and we're trying to see if we can use similar methodologies in agro-processing. Next slide. On enhancing the regulatory framework and ensuring compliance, there were a few areas that we looked at. The one was on enhancing safety and the other one was on combating illegal activities. On the safety side, Dalrad has implemented a new regulation from the 1st of September last year that specifies that packets of chicken may only be made up of one country of origin. So typically in the past, when you bought a packet of imported chicken, frozen chicken, it could have chicken from two or three different countries. It would be imported from different parts of the world and it would be packaged here in South Africa. The problem with that is if there is a challenge with chicken, it's difficult to trace the country of origin where that problem originated. So that has now been tightened. The industry has also been advised by the Department of Health to report any thawing practices performed under unhygienic conditions. On the illegal activities side, SARS has an interagency working group. It investigates illegal and illicit activity, and the DTIC and ITAC is part of this interagency working group. They meet regularly. They do monthly reports on progress with investigations in a number of priority sectors. We've elevated poultry to be a priority sector. Two cases are being dealt with on misclassification of poultry that was imported and a diverted consignment of poultry that was not cleared for import in South Africa. There's also been some investigation on bribery of public officials. SARS have sent schedules for payments of duties and fines, and suspects were arrested in one of the cases and released on bail, and criminal investigations are proceeding. Next slide. There are some trade measures that we've dealt with to support the local industry. In March 2020, there was a significant increase in customs duties on a number of poultry products from the period about 2019 to 2022. There was a trade dispute with the European Union and SACU, that's the Southern African Customs Union, on safeguard measures that SACU had put into place to protect local industry. It went all the way to arbitration, and on the substance of it, the SACU position prevailed, and so we were happy with the outcome of the arbitration. In January this year, ITAC had put provisional anti-dumping duties for bone-in chicken meat on five countries, and this was a holding operation for a six-month period while ITAC completed their work. When they've completed their work, they put the recommendation to the ministry to put anti-dumping duties in place on poultry from Brazil, Denmark, Ireland, Poland, and Spain. At the time when this was being considered, given the spike in food prices, both internationally but also locally, I took the decision to accept ITAC's recommendation, but to delay implementation for a 12-month period. On health and safety measures, currently there's avian flu in the European Union, which has resulted in import restrictions from all European countries, and so currently European countries are not able to export unprocessed poultry meat to South Africa. We're now reviewing whether the conditions exist to enable some European countries to resume trade. Health and safety measures are not intended to protect local producers. They are there to protect consumers. They are there for health and safety reasons. And so as soon as conditions are met, we open up to countries that have met the conditions. Next slide. The next few slides is really just a number of case studies. I'm going to run through them, but they're really a first attempt by the department to show how South Africans are participating in the sector. And we'll be doing more of these because there are many examples, but within the available time, we thought a few examples would be worth doing. This is the Isondo Farmers Cooperative, and it tells the story of Ellen Mokau, who got involved during lockdown. She's a chemical engineer by training, and she learned the basics of broiler raising online, and she started a small business. She had a social media following and realized that small farmers' ability to achieve their goals were limited because of land issues. And using the Stokveld tradition, she devised a model to bring a group of farmers to pool their resources to rent land, to set up infrastructure and get working capital together. And in this cooperative structure, they contribute equally and share in the profits. Our first co-op had 20 members and each contributed 10,000 rand to establish the broiler business near Hammanskraal. A second co-op followed a slightly different model with 31 members. And in November 2020, a local traditional leader granted the second co-op a 10-year lease on trust land in the Stingwater area north of Pretoria. And the co-op built a chicken house with its pooled capital. So this is an example really of local communities mobilizing capital and trying to get into the business of poultry farming. The next slide gives the example of Matswe Trust. It started producing for Supreme Poultry on the Zeres farm. And the partnership that it has, and you see a picture there of Grace Homongwe. She's doubled her production in the 9 years as a grower for Supreme Poultry. And that partnership involves three elements. There's a financial element, there's a technical support element, and there's a mentoring element. And Matswe Trust has doubled their production with further expansion in the pipeline. The next slide looks at poultry input costs, and it takes the example of Khatlego, who started Prime Trade Feed to provide feed to underserviced small farmers initially in the Northwest province. And at his factory, he packaged feed in smaller bags for ease of transport. And his story is interesting. the plant is in Makwasi, and it supplies feed to many small farmers in Northwest. He started a plant which can produce 30 tons of feed a day 8 years ago when he saw the market opportunity. The large feed companies were wanting to do bulk, and he saw that small farmers in remote areas were not being serviced, and they often had to drive 150 kilometers to buy a bag of feed. And his answer was to establish depots in those remote locations where customers can easily buy and collect feed. Small bags, 10 kilogram bags, it's easier to carry or transport in a taxi. He started to also offer a free service for certain products. This slide that's on now is about driving exports, and it looks at the example of Rainbow that's invested 220 million rand to have a second shift at the Hammersdale plant. And this is part of what the master plan wants to focus the industry on. Let's go for the domestic market. It's an important market and there's more opportunity there. But let's also drive exports so that we can get that kind of volume. If you look at those massive chicken processing farms in the United States or Holland, they're huge, and the economies of scale is such that they're able to sell chicken at prices that very few smaller producers can match. The next slide looks at the examples of North Roost Hatchery. It's in Makado in Limpopo, and it's a joint venture between a number of different players, and it received funding of 56 million rand as an investment. And you see Clive Dicherie inspects the first batch of chicks to hatch in North Roost Hatchery. Next slide. Is Petogo Farming Enterprise. It's a new poultry contract farm or grower. It's based in Grootspruit, and it's a black-owned company. It was funded with an investment of 65 million rand, and it's in, it created 25 new jobs as part of the commitment to grow poultry production. And the next slide provides more information on a farm, Ashley Farm, which is based in Babsfontein in Mpumalanga. And it's created 21 new jobs. Next slide. Looks at Country Bird Holdings. They've invested over a billion rand since the inception of the master plan. And they are on track to deliver 2.3 million birds a week to the South African market, creating 122 new jobs in the process. And you'll see there the CEO smiling, Brendan de Boer. Next slide. This would be the last case study. It's on Gegana Business Enterprise. It's a new poultry contract grower project for Astral Foods. It's in Piandra in Mpumalanga, and it's a black-owned company. And it's created 24 new jobs. It has 360,000 birds per cycle. And it's received funding, loan funding of 66 million rand for the expansion of the work of the business or of the setting up of the work. The next slide takes us to the next section on key challenges. The team had identified five challenges. On local procurement, there's more scope to secure support from additional retailers to buy local chicken. Some retailers have already started to stock more local chicken, and the team is hopeful that they can engage other retailers to join this. Poultry exports, it's been constrained by the outbreak of avian flu and other SPS-related issues, which we believe through the work that Dalrad is doing can and will be resolved fairly shortly. On transformation, while we've made some progress with contract poultry producers, there is a clear view from government that more can be done to increase the entry of Black South Africans in the sector, including in the wider ecosystem, such as feed production, hatcheries, slaughterhouses, and so on. That's really critical as the next phase of transformation. But before we're able to make enormous progress there, we want to make sure that we bring many more black poultry farmers into the value chain, both as independent farmers and as contract poultry producers. The cost of feed will always be a challenge because it represents such a big part of production cost, and the high cost and the unreliability of energy supply is a big worry for the industry. As in with all food production, you can't postpone. It's not like widgets that you make. Those chickens, those little chicks are growing all the time. They need feed. They need to be slaughtered at the right point in their life cycle. And so the energy challenge is an enormously important one for the industry. But there's also other challenges like rising fuel prices occasioned by the war in Ukraine and challenges in some areas with water supply. We saw the challenges that Astral in particular had with the Lekwa municipality, where the local municipality was really dysfunctional for part of the period and was unable to provide the basic services at local level that successful poultry production relies on. The next slide. The next slide, which we're waiting for, looks at the outcomes of the Executive Oversight Committee meeting. At our last meeting with stakeholders, we identified areas we're going to focus on. On energy, we're going to facilitate the engagement with ESCOM on electricity supply issues. But the industry has also been asked to look at what else can be done in addition to what ESCOM can do. And that includes looking at a more energy efficient production in the poultry industry. The team will be engaging with retailers to secure additional commitments to buy local. Proudly, South Africa will engage with the hospitality sector and other private sector players like the mining industry to lobby them to buy more local products. Investment to expedite industry support and reach the investment target of at least 50 contract growers by the end of 2023. There will be additional focus on what can be done on investment. Transformation, the commitment to industry transformation and the focus on ownership throughout the value chain, not only in poultry production, but as I've indicated, in hatcheries and in slaughterhouses, abattoirs and so on. So the IDC has indicated to us that this is an area that it's beginning to investigate carefully now. On exports, there's a joint commitment by government and the industry, and they want to take urgent action to eradicate avian flu and unlock export markets to the Middle East and cook products to the European Union. And on finance, Land Bank has indicated its appetite to participate in blended funding to support the investment that is being made in the sector. The following slides are really just data. This shows the poultry exports between 2018 and 2022. While the line is an upward line, we'd like to increase that more. Next slide provides a little bit of information on job creation over this period of the master plan, with the total number of jobs created each year and the total number of jobs in the sector. So the red line is total employment. The blue line is the growth in employment year by year. Next slide. This looks at the increase in the slaughter volume, both the capacity as well as the utilization over that period. Next slide. This looks at cooking capacity for cooked meat. And you see a big rise during the master plan period. As more export markets open, more can be done to build additional cooking capacity. Next slide. That's really just a thank you. The following slides are really just a bit of background to the master plan and some acronyms. So, Jefferson, that summarizes the report on the master plan. And I'd like to thank the stakeholders for their work on the master plan, and would like Chairperson to see whether there are any questions. I'd also like perhaps just an opportunity for each of the representatives of the the various constituents to say a word or two on their experience. I am in your hand, Chair. If the committee members would like to first ask some questions, we can get the stakeholders to make a comment afterwards. Or if you wish, I can invite three or so of the stakeholders to make a brief comment.
Yeah, I think, thank you very much, Minister, for that presentation. But I think let's take the input from the stakeholders so that when we interact with the presentation, it's a more holistic one, including the stakeholder input. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. So this is really just an opportunity for a three, 4 minute impromptu comments by different stakeholders. I'm going to invite Isaac Breitenbach from the South African Poultry Association to comment. I'd also like to invite after him Nakana Masoka from AFASA to make a comment, followed by Dr. Vet Boshoff from the Grain and Feed Producers. Their name is AFMA, the Animal Feed Manufacturers Association. And then from Labour, I'm going to ask Vuka Tongpo to make a comment. So perhaps if I can start with Isaac.
Minister, thank you. Thank you very much. I think that you've given a very comprehensive rundown on what we've done in terms of the master plan. I think it is a success. I think we've done a lot of work, but it doesn't stop here. We've pledged a commitment until 2024. We should see more investment, more job creation, more contract growers. And as you've mentioned, we probably need to focus on a lot more on the non-contract grower transformation part of the master plan. And then I'm happy to report that we have submitted the residue program for the European Union and the UK. And we've also submitted last week the VPNs that support this residue program to the Department of Agriculture. And that need to be finalized now and then sent through to respect the EU and the UK respectively. And I think that is great progress in terms of our efforts to export. A lot of work has gone into that. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Isaac. Can I then invite from AFASA Nakana Masoka? Nakana, I don't see your name on the platform, so I don't know if you are using one of the other colleagues of AFASA's gadgets, but can I hand over to you? While we try to resolve the technical issue, Chair, can I then invite Mr. Boshoff to take the floor? David Boshoff.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Minister, and good morning to all the colleagues on the call. Yes, AFMA, as the major supporting partner in SAPA, of course, produces the majority of all the poultry feed in the country, and in SAPA, and we are very aware of the cost of feed. Unfortunately, we also part of the global village, of which the prices of commodities, of course, is priced in dollar. So our exchange rate, can I say, sometimes is not to our benefit, but the prices of commodities are determined at the Chicago Board of Trade, which is an international platform or exchange, and we are price takers from there. So our prices in South Africa is derived from the Chicago Board of Trade. Unfortunately, there is quite a number of pressure points on commodities worldwide due to various situations in the world, being climatic or I would say unrest in the world, the war in the Ukraine and Russia, etc. And of course, we must not forget that South Africa only makes out 1% of the world's feed production. So, of course, there's a huge feed component out there. I can just mention one of the big, I would say, users of raw materials and commodities in the world is, of course, China. They've lost a third of their poultry, swine herds, and they are repopulating that. And that was more than 300 million pigs that they lost. They're repopulating that, and that, of course, puts quite pressure on maize as well as soya, which is also used in poultry. So, yeah, I would just like to raise that flag that there's a big demand for commodities out there, and the prices are determined internationally. And of course, we buy in dollar, and I think it's quite clear that we are always striving to have the best price for our consumers, which is the poultry industry, of course. And we are constantly looking at ways of how can we curb costs on that. But as Mr. Breitenbach has said, AFMA regard the poultry plan as a success, and we fully support this. And of course, we are eagerly looking towards the future. The larger we grow, the local market, the better the whole value chain will benefit. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, David. We're still struggling to reconnect Nakana Masoka from the African Farmers Association to the platform. He was here at the start. We'll keep trying, but can I then invite the representative of the Food and Allied Workers Union, Vuka Tonto. Vuka himself has played quite a key role in the early stages of the master plan. So it's a great pleasure, Vuka, to see you here. Please, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Minister, and good morning to the rest of the colleagues. Firstly, we want to say, Minister, we also strongly support the master plan as it were, and the reason behind why we had to embark on this road. Now, one of the things that we think that should be raised is firstly the presentation in itself. It's a good, comprehensive presentation, but would, however, request that maybe in future, if it is presented in contrast with the figures or the key areas of the master plan for purposes of it being a monitoring measure, you know, designed to see if there are any gaps and how far we have gone so that we can monitor ourselves going forward. Because you may find that there's somewhere where we have done way better and you are unable to acknowledge the success as it were. But the presentation itself, if it is made as a twofold type of a presentation, that will work. For example, the issue, one of the slides that I saw was based on the threat of the import, which is important, and I appreciate that the department monitors these figures. However, they should in any way, by way of a presentation, be translated into how are they a threat? How are they translated, and what are measures that are designed so that you don't have to realize that as you go in terms of the percentages and so on, including even the transformation. And we are happy to have seen that there are those who are assisted in various provinces, the contract farmers and so on. I would have also appreciated to make that as in contrast with the master plan, you know, key areas, in particular the numbers, to say, even though we know we're at 21 and so on, but from a transformation point of view, you ought to also reflect in terms of whether the demographics of each province are they well represented, particularly in terms of the black females, as it were, or black males, as it were. All those are obviously conforming to what necessarily would be a transformation in terms of its presentation. So, but we appreciate the presentation because it's assisted us for us to have to be able to see the work that has been done. But the other thing is that, Minister, I know that this is also related to this view, the export, the good work that has been done in terms of the export with regards to figures, as it were. Remember when Lyle was presenting the figures to say this is where we are at the minimal stage. We could not have, you know, by now, make reference to say how far, how much have we increased export in contrast with import flowing from that. And just lastly, Minister, I think what is important for us, because as we are directly involved in terms of such discussion and subcommittees and so on, in the event, because we heard from your, at an initial stage of your presentation, that the protection of our center has to be based on not just one issue or one area, but it has to be a mix of a combination of areas that are designed to protect the local economy, and in particular this sector, which we agree. However, the request will then be one leg that we think is of a disadvantage, as it were, would appreciate at least a space for us to have an interaction depending on whatever decision is made. For example, you might have taken a decision on the basis of inflation or food inflation to delay the anti-dumping duties, which at face value or how you observed it, it was important at the time. But at least a space of engaging so that we can better understand from the perspective of workers or the lowest paid, completely understanding that you are a busiest person amongst ourselves, but also if at least you can delegate someone whom we can engage on this one so that we don't find ourselves, you know, expressing it outside, you know, committees or relevant structures where we can engage and find a common ground. Otherwise, we appreciate all those who have done the work in supporting the master plan and will continue to also support the master plan from a productivity point of view and so on. Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you very much, Vuka. I'm going to check finally if we've succeeded with getting Nakana Masoka back on the platform. And not seeing him back on, Chair, I'm going to hand back to you. When Nakana joins us, we may want to provide at that stage a short opportunity for him to make a remark. But back to you then, Chairperson. And thank you very much for the opportunity given both to the stakeholders and to the department to set out some progress.
Thank you very much, Minister, and also to the stakeholders who have made an input. Committee members, there we have the presentation from the Minister and input from the stakeholders. Can I see hands for discussion? Honourable Sring. Honourable Sring, you and then Dr. Tswaku. Honourable McPherson. We'll start with Honourable Sring and then we'll take hands as we go. Yes, I have noted you and also Honourable Malamacha.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Minister and those who have also added their comments, thank you for the presentation. First question is with regards to what is the comparative view of the poultry sector in terms of jobs lost during that difficult period where we saw almost a collapse within the poultry sector. You know, thousands of jobs have been lost. You recall the Rainbow shutting down, particularly close by to us here in Hammersdale, KZN. So what is the comparative view in terms of, you know, those jobs lost during that difficult sector versus job created? Do you have any figures? So while we appreciate the growth, and you've showed us the charts of the growth in the sector, but have we regained those jobs that were lost? Is there have we surpassed you know the jobs lost? So is there a growth there, or are we still in a deficit scenario? Second question is in terms of the poultry feed sector, where in South Africa and I suppose many other countries are price takers. And to a large extent, then are at the mercy of the volatility of the markets or your exogenous factors, if I recall some of my economics studying. What can be done to lessen the exposure to this type of volatility? And then my final question is, to a large extent, we are seeing a particular pattern, which is mass production, which understandably gives you those scales of economy. But to lessen our damage also to the economy, are there different models of poultry farming, which are less feed intensive, less energy intensive? I recall seeing a farmer who would take his chickens, and he had almost a hen house, if you want to call it that, attached to the tractor. He would then take the chickens early morning out into the field where he was planting, and then the chickens would actually feed off the insects. So he's cutting back also on insecticide use, where the chickens essentially, you know, go in and do what they were created to do. So are there different models that we are encouraging, or is it the mass production economies of scale that we are chasing? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Tsoaku.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Can you move closer to your microphone? You'll sound like you're overseas somewhere.
Oh, can you hear me now?
That's a bit better, yes.
Okay. No, I wanted to... I think two questions. One question number one would be to say, why are we importing one chicken? The amount of the money that we are actually spending is 1.4 billion in imports on chicken. Can the minister maybe make me understand why are we importing chicken? Something that we can produce here in South Africa. We can produce it so easy. I mean, it's something very, very simple. Why we have taken this counter-revolutionary stance to import in Rome a simple chicken that I myself actually do? Why are we doing that? Either you are aware of the job that you can create, but just say, look, it's okay. Even if it's unpopular view, maybe that's a bold leadership saying South Africa will no longer import any chickens because we've got the capacity. We can do the same South Africa. Why are we doing that? I'm just puzzled. And really, this Italian zigzag and these good stories to tell, they're not doing anything to be actually tell boring, because really a good story to tell is to say, I were able to produce a South African. That's a good story to tell. We're able to produce chicken. And we've got so many companies, and we list all of them, and we've created so many jobs in real estate. That, for me, that is a good story to really tell, that we've got a capability. But if, Minister, you're coming and say, we're still importing so much chicken, so much. This is really a conservation. It doesn't make sense at all. I know you'll say that we're operating in a global economy, we find all the trade agreements and all of that. But it does sometimes come to a point where you really, there are things that you really have to be selfish for. But no, this one, we're going to protect them. This one, we're going to be able to, to do this, the chicken for like that. And I wanted to check with the minister. Only. Okay, in terms of these, is there any way that made the existing now, okay, the existing, people can have sort of permanent, not permanent, but the very agreements which are more permanent. I don't know, I probably have used the word, because most of these agreements with this, with the uptake, people who will be taking this chicken which are being produced everywhere. They are like, there are some time to time, expire within a month, 3 months and all of that. And the person who has this chicken, you find that you cannot to produce them anymore. So I think that for me, it was what was my concern. And I think the last one, before I forget, I just forgot that point. Why did we let countries like U.S., I think at some point U.S., they were dumping chicken here. Wow. I never understood that. It was actually running at some point. There is a chicken of that. Why are we allowing other countries to go and dump their chicken here? Like I say, what is the logic behind that? The politics, any economic impact. What is stopping us from really not taking bold steps to protect the jobs? And the South Africa might say, we are not going to do this, and we're not going to have it now, we're going to be producing all these chickens with ourselves. So there's a big market. I know in the township everywhere, this chicken is a big market. It can create a lot of jobs. That is actually your hanging fruit for crying out loud. That's what you can do. You can't maybe industrialize the system of those basics of steel and the machinery, maybe for a period of time, because now we don't steal, we must do steal again. But chicken can produce, there are no cars. People, you can even say, they're going to put up a result, they're going to send a memo to the World Trade Organization. But it is unfair that South Africa really has to import this chicken. And we're going to increase the difficulty to whatever rate you just want to do, so that you are able to create jobs and also. For security of food, food security. What happens if, let's say, outside there's a problem and all of that, that creates problems and Russia and all of that, then we cannot import chicken anymore. And people like me, you find that I can't resist them because we've been importing. What are you going to do about that? So let's think about this thing of the food very, very carefully. And we can make the whole impact. And I think that we can create jobs out of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Twaku, Honourable McPherson.
Thanks very much, Chair. So the Minister started off with the correct framing when he said that one has to look at what is appropriate to deal with the issues in the sector. And he then framed the poultry master plan as the solution to the problem. So I disagree with that to some extent, Minister, because many of the objectives of the master plan, which one of the key ones is around, as you said, price stability of poultry and reducing the price of meat, have been exacerbated by the poultry master plan. So on those two key objectives, the master plan has in fact made the cheapest form of protein for millions of South Africans more expensive and less stable. And that seems problematic if that is one of the two key objectives of the master plan. So in fact, the solution to the problem has in fact made the problem worse for millions of people. And sort of, you know, government's answer to that is, you know, sort of they put their hands up in the air and said, well, there's nothing we can do. They've blamed the war in Ukraine, which is a refreshing terminology that is used by more and more government ministers, including yourself, which I welcome. And so then we then have to go back to, well, is this in fact appropriate? Now, I had the ability to meet with a relatively large poultry producer, and we had extensive discussions about this, and their views were is that the poultry master plan has essentially fallen by the way and is actually not really assisting the industry anymore. So if it's not assisting the industry and if it's not assisting consumers, who is it assisting then at the end of the day? And one of the big gripes that they had, and this is something that has been going on for many years, is the total failure through Dalrad and through the DTIC to open up markets for the export of white meat. As you have correctly stated in your analysis up front, that European markets command a greater price on white meat than certainly the South African market does. So if there was a balance to be found where South African poultry producers were able to achieve a higher export price for their white meat, why has that never been taken advantage of by DTIC and by Dalrad? And, you know, I think the problem is that there's a continual shifting of responsibilities to who is to do that. Because I think the big mistake, and this is where I fundamentally disagree with many organizations and political parties that may be on this call today, that the idea that you can simply just say, well, no exports, and that's what's good for the industry is fundamentally wrong. There is a detrimentally low amount of competition within the poultry sector, which allows the big JSE-listed companies who made big billions of rands of profits in the last couple of years to simply lift their prices, not to sort of any other measure than to parity prices of imported chicken plus duties. So they've not sought to lower the price of chicken. In fact, what they've done is use the opportunity with the duties that you have imposed to raise their prices, thereby inflicting further harm for already poor and struggling households across the country. One of the statistics I found fascinating actually was from this producer is that South Africa is the sixth most competitive poultry producing country in the world, which is a statistic that is not often told, and I understand why, because it's an inconvenient statistic to tell, is that actually our poultry producing market is exceptionally competitive when compared to some of the other markets, particularly in Asia. And so we have created this this sort of myth and misnomer that South African poultry is under attack by cheaper chicken that is being imported into the country. And I think one has to go back to take a historical trip down memory lane when the big producers were selling seawater for the price of chicken, and they made billions and billions of rands worth of profits by doing that. And correctly so, the courts intervened much to the opposition, and they oppose these things to stop that shocking practice of pumping chicken up to 85% of seawater and making a lot of money. And so what their next idea was to then is to create this artificial idea of a market under siege by imports, to shut out imports, slap tariffs on all of them, raise their prices to that parity market, and then recoup the losses through their scheme that had collapsed after the courts intervened. And that's actually the truth of the matter. And, you know, I don't buy the arguments that many of them put. What, in fact, many of them have said to me is that what would be extremely helpful is labor market stability for their businesses, input cost stability, which they have to continuously absorb, whether it be through fuel, water, electricity, local government incompetence and collapse. That is what makes many businesses uncompetitive. And so we've created a bogeyman to cover up for many of the failures which national, provincial, and local governments do have a hand in resolving. And the loser really at the end of the day, Minister Patel, is consumers, particularly poor consumers. Consumers who live off of grants, consumers who live off of low wages, and they are forced to pay more and more for the cheapest form of protein. And that's why it's disgusting that 27% of all children in South Africa are malnutritioned and stunted. And thank you very much. It's a bit of a tongue twister, but thank you for your assistance. Because they just simply can't afford to put food in their bellies, and we are exacerbating that problem for them. So I think, with respect, the problem is misdiagnosed. The solution is even more misdiagnosed. And I think that we're being led by lobby groups in special interests and people who seek to create closed shop agreements in the poultry sector. And I think that we really need to go back to the drawing board and need to get to the nub of what the problem is and what needs to be done about it. But I only see the situation becoming worse and worse. I think that there's failures all around. And I think that someone someday needs to answer for the inability to access duty-free chicken exports to the European market that we just have not taken advantage of over the last 5 years. So I hope that those are constructive inputs. I know you enjoy constructive inputs, even if you disagree with them. But it is a subject that I am passionate about, and I do think that there is a lot more to this market that can be done. I think there is an opportunity for growth. I think there's an opportunity for competitiveness, but I think that there also has to be a real honest look at the sector and the players and the big players particularly and the lobby groups in the sector. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Malamacha.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the presenting Water Master Plan. Very straightforward to the rescue of the economy that has suffered a huge blow during the COVID-19 that all of us we have witnessed. It will be very wrong that we cast a wrong aspiration that we try to dramatize the economy instead of accepting the reality that there are challenges in the economy, and if we have such master plans which are equal to the task, we really need to first listen to the players. Chairperson, one was very impressed, which is not something common and something that happens time and again in many sectors, where you will find that the labor sector is behind the ideal and it's behind the ideal. So who are we to be much more negative, while the people in the sector itself through the voted labor sector that are able to express their happiness and see hope at the end of the day. I think some few challenges that were mentioned by the very same union, we will just need to be tackled so that at the end of the day, there's no vacuum, in particular where the minister, they will want to hear your voice, because the voice that you normally provide to them is the hope. Then the other thing that Chairperson has impressed me is to see how the upcoming, if not the emerging, are enjoying the support. And therefore, one is very happy to learn that the likes of Isaac from the locals, understanding that South Africa is not America in the early 30s where it applied the isolated, splendid economic policy where it's like we can't go to other countries and we cannot let other countries also come to. The only thing that minister, you just take your time and explain to members how best are you dealing with this import and export of goods so that it's not suppressing the locals. But the free trading policy must remain. Minister, the issue of the Ukraine-Russia matter is a known factor. We can't be jumping as if we are not affected by the high price of oil, which at the end of the day touches every sector. Therefore, Bishop is very articulative when dealing with those challenges, and we are saying we understand that and we also appreciate it. It's just for the minister to say how best do we relieve those that are finding themselves to be affected by that, in particular the small farmers, I mean the small producers. The other aspect, Chairperson, to the minister, the high number of jobs created during these difficulties, this must also be highlighted and appreciated. We will want the minister to say, going forward, what is the intention and the target of the coming year? I think that's a very good story to tell, and we must raise this hope by putting another high target so that we can see being working. I'm saying this because we have got another phase that can be used, and the Dalrap to assist especially from the feed side, so we understand that it might be one of the other departments of Togo's about working with us, how many entrepreneurs that we are producing and how do we assist them financially to do this. Minister, it's known the issue of the flu, the avian flu has this, avian flu and other SPS-related issues, do sometimes affect the production, but one will be very much happy to advise that let's have measures in place to keep them, so that at the end of the day, in particular the upcoming, because it has tendency of just washing away everything in the farm, let's have an assistance of some sort so that we don't have to start afresh. The other aspect, Minister, is to the control of the press. You call it the premium meter. I mean the premium meter versus the leftover that has to come to us, not far from what I mentioned in terms of the export and the import. How best do we control so that at the end of the day, we can't be complaining of over exported to us and imported to us. I think this will be my contribution, Minister, through the Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Malamacha, Honourable Mbuyani, and then Honourable Burns Ngamashe.
Chairperson, thanks for the opportunity. Let me first welcome the presentation by the Minister and the stakeholders. Chair, we have heard the presentation talks of the improved local production by implementing tariff increase, and also have heard of agri-industrial fund driving domestic demand, trade measures to support local industry, and also the anti-dumping. Chair, the question of transformation in the sector vis-à-vis the job opportunities that have been created by the industry or the sector in terms of demographics per province. Can we be able to have that so that we understand the transformational arrangement moving forward? So the other one is the localization and beneficiation. It's a very key for industrialization. Then now we want to check in terms of the protectionist approach. Do we have companies or individuals that we are mentoring, we are monitoring, and also are protected from the global value chain economy? Also, the improvement of local production by implementing tariffs, yes, I will spoke to that. But the poultry production and local distribution to nearby ShopRite, ShopRite Checkers and so forth, where they are able to sell them. And we were disturbed by the question of price, because the locally produced poultry is very much expensive than the one that is imported from the other countries. I don't know what is the reason. If we can be clarified to that extent, and do we have any intergovernmental relations in terms of working relationship between the DALA, the DTIC, in terms of funding small companies and SMEs, so that they form part of the value chain in terms of the economy. I will pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Burnsman, Honourable Mbuyani, Honourable Burnsman Mashe, and welcome to the meeting.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I had connectivity challenges. I'm not sure whether Honourable McPherson knows where Tujwa is. Honourable Chairperson, I think we are all aware that we are now in the silly season of electioneering. So we are not oblivious to the fact that there will be a lot of commandeering that seeks to score cheap political points at the expense of what is real and what is factual. And I don't think after such a wonderful and good presentation, we should be distracted from the realities, especially as they impact in various ways to our people. I think the presentation by the minister, which is always the case, quite meticulous, clinical, very much focused in terms of giving clarity and scientifically showing in terms of verifiable statistics that this is what is happening, this is where we are as the ANC-led government on these matters. While we look at things from that perspective, we are also aware that one of the serious challenges we have is around the dumping which affects especially local producers. Now, I think on slide 14, the minister did talk about the anti-dumping duties, especially on poultry from Brazil, Denmark, Ireland, Poland, Spain, and so on, which was approved around July. But of course, we are mindful of the spike in international food prices, which again arises out of, among others, the war between Russia and Ukraine, which war, by the way, is fueled and perpetrated in ways that undermine the multilateral institutions to engage the parties. We must be honest in terms of our analysis of the situation. And we are very much clear of the position that South Africa has taken, and that of ensuring that those that are involved are brought into a table and for purposes of each finding one another. Now, that war has an impact as well. So what I want to check from the minister is the impact to local poultry producers that would have arisen out of the delay in terms of the implementation of the anti-dumping duties. What is the impact? And secondly, that decision to delay the implementation, to what extent has it been socialized and democratized with the poultry master plan stakeholders? I think those are the issues that we would want to check so as to ensure that at all material times, our people, especially those who are in the sector as producers, as well as general consumers, are taken on board and well advised in terms of what is currently happening. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Burns Mamashe. Minister, over to you. I'm not sure whether the stakeholder who was unable to connect has managed to do so, but I leave it to you to manage the responses and to allow that person to present or say a few words if he is available. Thank you, Minister. Over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think some really interesting questions that have been raised by honourable members. And I'm going to start with Honourable Tring's questions, which I thought particularly the third question was fascinating. And really on the jobs issue, the first part of it, I would like to see if Isaac and Vuka would like to comment on the job losses before the master plan and the job gains subsequently, and whether we've got to a point of some stability now on employment. Given that it's a large industry, one would expect that it would vary. On aggregate, are there some reflections that you'd like to make on that, Isaac? You may also want to briefly comment on the poultry food sector, feed sector. I will ask David Bosov to also come in there in a moment. But perhaps on that set of issues, if I can invite you through the chairperson to comment. Let's start just with the jobs issues.
Is he still on the platform?
It looks like we may have lost Isaac while we try to get Isaac reconnected. Vuka, any thoughts that you'd like to offer on that?
Thank you, Minister. No, Minister, our observation is that there were job losses before the master plan. And the job losses were as a result of what we raised publicly so as well with regards to the influx of the imported chickens, and which we ultimately presented it as chicken dumping. And one of the issues that, or one of the things that assisted us was then when we crafted the master plan to say, how do we then protect or regain the jobs, as it were. So at an initial stage of the master plan, it was about 3,900 jobs in total, which was supposed to have been completed in 2020. But as a result of the COVID-19, we had issues in the interim. But then again, you would have a situation where because of the very same COVID-19, you will have some employers who would use the very same COVID-19 to say, these are challenges that we have, and as a result, we would have to retrench and so on. Sitting here, Minister, what we must understand is that the job losses or the participants here may not necessarily be participants who, let me make an example, the big players in these committees are those that can freely express to say we have not retrenched, and the union will respond and say, no, we appreciate that. But at the periphery where you find that there are changes or challenges from COVID-19 and other challenges, that's when you begin to realize job losses. And in that process, that's where you get to see that the challenges of job losses are not in any way directly addressed in the process. But then when you zoom into the master plan in terms of the figures, that's when we raised this point earlier to say we'd appreciate if when there's a presentation, there should be a presentation in comparison with what was designed from the master plan and what is it that was realized from the master plan until now, so that we can make a comparison whether we are growing or not. So in terms of the jobs, yes, there have been job creation. We're not going to dispute that. In fact, the one colleague who appreciated the job creation, we want to join that to say, yes, indeed, there have been job creation. And we want to also in advance our view to say we should come up with other figures in contrast with time frames to say how far can we go from here. So in terms of the job losses, we have had situations that we have as a union directly addressed with those employers, even though they were hiding behind COVID-19. But from the big players, as it were, you will not realize that because we sit with them, we engage with them. But at the periphery in rural areas, we realize that, and we had to zoom into those workplaces, and some of them have been addressed. So we need to use the master plan, therefore, going forward to say, how do we advance this and stretch it out, designed that even if there are job creations, but we need to make sure that all other areas, they are not reducing indirectly the number. Also by way of a presentation, which it has to present, it has to be presented by way of making a comparison in terms of jobs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you very much, Vuka. I'm going to ask the Director General just to get his the team of officials to reach out to those stakeholders who we've lost on the platform, so that I can be advised when they've rejoined us. Can I then next turn to Devet Bosov? Devet, an interesting question was asked about the poultry feed sector by Honorable Tring. Would you like to comment on it? In particular, he was interested to see what can we do to reduce exposure to price volatility for local producers. Obviously, as you've indicated, you benchmark against global prices. But any thoughts, any reflections you'd like to share with the committee?
Yes, thank you, Minister, for the opportunity, and thank you to the member for the questions. Yes, as rightfully stated, we are benchmarked against international prices. I would like to start off by quoting Mr. McPherson. It is true that South Africa is the sixth most, competitive industry in the world. That goes for growing poultry and the effectiveness or efficiency of the poultry farmer in South Africa. What we as a feed industry see where the problem occurs is definitely the member also requested what possible mechanisms can be put in place. Firstly, I would say the exchange rate volatility, and we can't control that, but the exchange rate volatility is controlled. It's a factor of international happenings. It's a factor of political stability, etc., etc. Our view is that we should look to the primary sector due to the fact that this is a total value chain approach, and that goes from fertilizer, seed, the producers of grains and oil seeds into the value chain. So I would focus on assistance to the primary inputs, and that is the farming side to it, seed, fertilizer. We all know that fertilizer is the main driver of prices on the primary level. So I would really consider that. Regarding infrastructure, that goes for transport, water, electricity, ports, etc. That is a state function where we are, as industry, are taking part in and trying to assist where we can. But when it comes to big investments that need to be made to improve these infrastructures, that we leave to the government. But we will gladly assist in rolling out those plans. And then, of course, talking on inputs to the poultry industry, we are currently, we have a soya value chain, one of the arms that we are looking towards cost in the value chain of poultry specific and other feeds as well. I would look into the local pricing of soya beans and soya bean meal, as well as sunflower seed and sunflower oil cake. Now, we've been looking into the possibility to, trade a local contract on the JSE for those products that we don't have derived prices, although we will receive signals from the international market. But if we have local contracts traded on the JSE, we will have a more accurate price determining factor there. And it will also be more transparent and good for the market. I think that's, we are busy with that, but I think if we can request some assistance from DTIC perhaps, we can have a look into that and also assist the crushing fraternity in South Africa, because the big issue is, of course, storage capacity at crushing facilities to deliver these products onto the JSE contract. We would seriously consider that as assisting the whole process and the cost of feed. One must always remember, broadly looking towards a broiler diet, 60% to 65% is maize, and 30 to 35% is soyas, and there is some sunflower whale cake also in the ration. So those two big commodities I will spend a lot of time on, specifically looking at the primary sector, seed, fertilizer, and then on the price, determining factor or mechanism on the JSE, look at more locally contracts that's not internationally derived. Minister, and that is, and of course, the infrastructure, which just an example, I think it's a quite known fact, that it's cheaper to import soybean meal from Argentina than to cart soybean meal from Randfontein to Cape Town by truck. So that's why imports are keeping on the coastal regions, but transport, if we can address that, we would further enhance the development of the soya value chain as well as the whole value chain in agriculture within the space, or can I say ambit, of the poultry industry. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, David Boshoff. I think some interesting ideas to follow up between SAPA and DG, if you can put the team together to follow up on this matter of local contracts and how we can work with the grain producers to reduce volatility. I'm going to, I see that Isaac has rejoined us, and I'm going to invite Isaac to comment on the employment storyline that had come up earlier from Honorable Tring and some of the other honorable members of the committee, as well as to look at different models of production, whether it's only scale production that is being pursued in the market at the moment, or whether there's more niche production that are less energy intensive and feed intensive. Isaac, perhaps through the chair, I'd like to invite you. And you'll have to unmute.
Mr. Breitenbach, can you unmute?
Chairperson, through you, while we get the team to just call Isaac Breitenbach to see if he can be assisted with the technology, let me in the meantime then proceed with the other questions, and the team can just let me know when Isaac and the technology have made friends with each other. So, Honorable Tring, I think really the question you've raised about the form of future production is quite interesting, because in a world that's becoming a lot more conscious about the environment around sustainability issues, food production will no doubt become the next big frontier where consumers are going to be probing the conditions under which foods are made. We've already seen in the wine industry, certification has played a big role in gaining access to lucrative markets globally. And in the egg market, as a good example, we've seen the price premium for organic eggs or free-range eggs compared to eggs that are produced in these large indoor units that are the bulk of our production system.
And really, historically, it's been a trade-off between price and the conditions. But I would anticipate that there will be, particularly with a growing number of consumers, a preference for poultry that's produced in more sustainable conditions. South Africa would need to be part of that, but at the same time, there are millions of South Africans who really battle to get protein at affordable prices. So it's to find that that balance. Honorable Tswaku has drawn, I think, correctly attention to the level of imports of poultry. Now, there are two points to raise in respect of the poultry imports. On the one hand, we seek to bring down the level of imports over time through improving the overall capacities inside the industry, and a number of the comments have already raised issues there relating to feed costs, other input costs, energy supply, the logistics. David Bosov now mentioned the trucking costs from one part of the country to another part of the country. And on the other hand, the judicious use of trade measures. We have an option. We could take the view that we're going to close the South African economy up. We are going to just put the highest barriers on every single item. And the truth is, if we do that and every other country does that, we get to a world in which we all become poorer. Because South Africa sells more than 600 billion rands worth of manufactured products to the rest of the world every year. And those products require, they create and sustain enormous numbers of jobs. Those jobs and those economic opportunities will all be lost if we were unable to sell those goods. So the view we've taken is we try to avoid the two fundamentalisms. The one fundamentalism is one that says simply open up the market, reduce all tariffs to zero for every product, and let's simply maximize consumer welfare. I don't really see many countries who do that. Even countries that espouse free trade. We've just come back from the United Kingdom. It's a poster for free trade in theory, but when we talk about access for South African sugar and South African tinned fruit and South African wine and South African products, then we meet the hard reality that countries make calculations about what is in their best interest. And so, in theory, simply reducing tariffs to zero would enhance consumer welfare, but it would come at an enormous cost to the income of those consumers. In other words, we'll have goods that are theoretically cheap, but nobody will have jobs to pay for that, because our economy would not have been able to sustain the large numbers of young people coming in every year. So the fundamentalism on the one side is not going to help. On the other hand, we also avoid a fundamentalism on the other side, which really sees every problem that industry has must be resolved only by the highest level of tariffs that we can get. Just close our borders. Let's just stop imports on every single item. And so the localization strategy, so the price of that, of closing ourselves to the world, is rises in prices, and a world in which people don't trade with each other. And that, as we've seen in the past, is a world that is where welfare, human welfare, is compromised, where innovation is limited, where throughout human history, for thousands of years, the big breakthroughs in civilization have been because people have traded with each other. People have engaged with each other. Ideas have flowed across borders. Goods have flowed across borders. And that we need to retain.
So how do we then balance between these two extremes? And that's where the approach we've taken on trade and industrial development is a careful blend, that we open up the markets where it's helpful, and we provide some level of support where local industry is absolutely requiring it. The challenge when we provide support to local industry is obviously that it can lower everybody's innovation, their competitiveness, their incentive to produce quicker, cheaper, better. And so to address that challenge, we've introduced, as honorable members will know, a greater level of reciprocity in trade, where we say to producers who seek tariff support, we say, show us that you are investing in your workers and in your equipment and in your work process, that you're spending money on capital equipment, that you are making your production processes inherently more competitive. Because when we can see you prepared to make that commitment, then trade support can be a temporary shield that you use, but it doesn't become a long-term crutch that you have to rely on. We've been the road of massive protection of everything around us under the pre-1994 political dispensation. Our markets were closed in many instances. We've been the road of rapid liberalization from 1994, 1995, as a result of the commitments that had been made under the Uruguay Round. The country liberalized its tariffs on a number of industrial products very rapidly, and we saw enormous numbers of jobs lost. We saw huge levels of deindustrialization. So what we now have is a more careful industrial strategy that seeks to build competitiveness, that uses trade where it is warranted, where the evidence suggests it's going to be on aggregate helpful. And we take the tough decisions where we decide, for example, we get an application from frozen food producers that they want to have high levels of tariff protection. We may decline that because it's not in the country's interest to do so. Where we get an application to increase tariffs, in a particular sector, we may support that if it's in the country's interest. So really it is a evidence-based, pragmatic, case-by-case analysis, as opposed to a position that says we are, in as a matter of principle, opposed to tariff adjustments or increases, or we are, as a matter of principle, opposed to a reduction in tariffs. I hope, Honorable Chwaku, that helps to provide a little bit of context to the trade policy. On the length of contracts for producers, that some producers find that the period is limited, it is an area that I would like the department to pay more attention to, because when new and smaller producers are able to get longer production offtake commitments, procurement commitments, it will allow them to invest more heavily in their business, and that can only assist with long-term sustainability of their businesses. On why do we allow the United States to dump chicken in South Africa? South Africa took the view that we did an anti-dumping investigation that included the United States. We put quite significant anti-dumping duties on American chicken. We've provided for a quota that was negotiated, and any product above that quota attracts quite high levels of anti-dumping duties. ITAC has been looking at the expiry of those duties, and they have concluded some of their work in this regard. And so as long as we see dumping, whether it's from the United States or any other country, we will have dumping duties, anti-dumping duties in place. At the same time, we do where we see that dumping is no longer a feature of a country's trade practices, then we will be swayed by the evidence before us. Honourable McPherson, I appreciate that we've moved the dialogue forward. You've now acknowledged the correct framing, at least of some of the issues. And policy making, Honourable McPherson, as I know you will appreciate, is always a careful balancing act, that we try to achieve a number of distinct policy objectives. Sometimes these policy objectives are in tension with each other, and we've got to be able to find a way of navigating this. In the case of South Africa, it's unquestionably true that our critical policy goal is to create more jobs and provide more economic opportunities for young people, entrepreneurship opportunities, and more economic inclusion. So if we take that as the measure, it means that we ought to follow policies that enhances producer welfare, that in other words, support local industry to the maximum. At the same time, we seek to promote consumer welfare. We want to improve the quality of life of South Africans, which means having access to food at affordable prices. If we were to take that as the only goal, then we should maximize consumer welfare, which means the lowest possible prices. So what do we do here? Do we drop our jobs goals? We can't. Do we drop completely our consumer goals? We should not. It's finding that careful balance. So where Honorable McPherson sees tensions inherent in the master plan in how it seeks to address multiple goals, I say welcome to the world in which tensions are inherent in decision making. It's, I hope, a degree of wisdom that we are able to bring as the public sector to the choices we have to make that can balance these carefully. On the one hand, we took the decision to increase tariffs in March 2020, so that would look carefully at producer interests. On the other hand, we've postponed the implementation date for the anti-dumping duties by 12 months. We know the producers were not very happy with that, and they had verbalized their position in the public domain, but that would assist consumers in finding a careful blend and balance in pricing. And that's really what the conduct of policy is all about. Honorable McPherson, I'm happy that you've met with a large poultry producer. I would be very happy to be favored with the details of the poultry producer so that we can see what their challenges are. But they are represented by SAPA, I would imagine. And here is an inherent challenge, Honorable McPherson, that you've experienced. On the one hand, you've met with a large poultry producer and you've taken their view as gospel, namely in the view of that person who spoke to you, the master plan, you say is not supported by industry, or is not supporting industry. On the other hand, you also make the point, Honorable McPherson, that the master plan unduly supports large players and allow these large players to make profits. Now, one can't have it both ways. Either they have the view that the master plan doesn't help them, or they have the view that the master plan does help them. And for me, that is when we deal with difficult ones, and we took the decision to start the master plans largely in the most difficult sectors of the economy. We could have chosen things like the global business services, or foam production, areas that are relatively easier. But that's not where there were enormous numbers of jobs that were at risk immediately of being lost. So though it meant recognizing that it was going to be a difficult road, we took as government the view that part of governance is not to walk away from difficult sectors, but to confront that. And so SAPA and the CEOs of the poultry producers
were all present at the recent meeting of the Executive Oversight Committee, and they all indicated they found, as local producers, that the master plan is helpful to long-term planning. They can see the approach that government is taking on the industry, and they in turn can make long-term investment commitments. That does not mean that industry will want to, that industry will support every decision of government, or that every part of the master plan is comfortable to them. The CEOs were recognizing that we will put pressure on the industry to transform, to provide space for new players to come in, for young people to come in, for women-owned poultry farms, abattoirs, and hatcheries to emerge, and that's uncomfortable to players who have dominated the market to date. At the same time, thinking maturely about the industry, you want to retain the strengths of your existing players. You want to focus them much more to exports and the opportunities in the export market. And you want to curb any resort to predatory pricing, to abuse of dominance, or to any unfair conduct in the market. So the competition authorities keep a watchful eye on practices in sectors like these. The Honourable McPherson raises the issue of the access to export markets, and I think this is an area that we need to work a lot more aggressively. The problem that we've had in recent times is avian flu, and the European Union, which has enormous resources for ensuring that they are able to do the inspections in their poultry farms, that they're able to meet all the high standards and so on, they found a massive reduction in their exports to the rest of the world, including to South Africa, because of avian flu in the European Union. And I'm sure Honourable McPherson won't blame the European Department of Trade and Industry or the European Department of Agriculture for not doing their work when they're dealing with avian flu. So similarly, as we emerge from avian flu, our expectation is that there would be a lot more work done. And the industry has indicated that they've completed some work on the residue monitoring that would enable us to put a more compelling case to the European Union for access to their markets. On the issue that Honourable McPherson raises, that there is a storyline that the big players deliberately set out to put forward, that it's a market under siege, and Honourable McPherson says he doesn't think it's a market under siege. He's now become, I think, convinced that South Africa's production side is globally competitive. Well, first, Honourable McPherson, I appreciate the recognition on some of the competitive strengths of local industry. As government, we'd like them to improve that competitiveness even more, and obviously input costs is a key part of that. But some of these input costs are quite difficult to address. I mean, for example, on labor markets, cutting the wages of workers is not an option for South Africa. These are fellow South Africans who are trying to make a decent income to feed their families. So we've got to shift more onto what VUCA has highlighted as partnerships to improve productivity on farms and addressing many of the logistics challenges. There are certain input costs that are outside of our direct control, like fuel prices, but what we can do is by improving some of the infrastructure, we may be able to reduce the reliance on excessive trucking. So just building more local capability near to markets is an important way of doing that. Honourable McPherson raised the issue of
the extensive challenges with poverty and malnutrition. And I think that must always focus us enormously. It's an area of common focus across the different political parties in Parliament, that we all are committed to the same goals of fighting poverty and providing economic opportunity. But one of the biggest drivers of poverty is unemployment. When people don't have jobs, they don't have the means to be able to buy food. And so much as we need to have less expensive food, we also need to have jobs for South Africans. And it's that careful balance that we keep on working in the master plan. I'm then going to move to the points raised by Honorable Malimache. First, thank you very much, Honorable Malimache, for the support and comments that you've made. You raised the issue around small producers, and it's an area that I think is particularly important, that we, poultry is a means to bring smaller players into the market. And they face enormous challenges. They can't very often compete with the large players for the economies of scale, for the costs that they can secure in the market because they buy in bulk. And so there needs to be a greater effort at coordination among small players. And one of the case studies that I highlighted earlier was of a cooperative venture involving a number of farmers collaborating with each other, with a South African, female South African, who's brought them all together. I think she's a chemical engineer by training, if I recall, from the case study. And what she's done, which is very, very interesting, is that she's brought different players together to see whether by combining their efforts, she's able to secure scale output, or at least some degree of scale output, and at the same time bring in economic opportunities for smaller players. And I'm talking about Ellen Mokau and Isondo Farmers Cooperative. And this was an instrument that was used by Afrikaner farmers in the pre-1994 area very, very extensively. Clover started as a farmers cooperative. KWV, BKB in the wool area was a farmers cooperative. So there's a lot of opportunity with those kind of cooperative measures to bring smaller players in. And one of the areas that I've asked the department already pre-COVID to work on, but COVID interrupted that, was to take a road show of DTIC entities into local areas, into district municipalities, and expose all of the services of government to local players. And what we can do is maybe do it in partnership with Dalrad, where we can for areas where there's a significant farming footprint, in addition to bringing in the DTIC group and the small business group, we can also see how we can bring Dalrad capacity to those roadshows. And I hope we can kick off those roadshows in the first quarter of next year, the first calendar quarter of next year, because they are bringing government services to local communities. Honorable Malimetra has made some very useful comments about target setting for the coming year. And I have challenged the master plan players to look at tighter, better targets in the period ahead. And of course, we're now working on addressing through Dalrad the issues around the avian flu. On the premium meat versus the discounted meat, I want to clarify that that doesn't deal with the quality of the meat. It's really just a different cut of the chicken. And many people prefer actually the cheap, the meat rather, that would be bone-in meat. Not everybody prefers the boneless chicken. So it's not an indication of whether the meat is quality meat. It's really the part of the chicken that consumers prefer. And in some parts of the world, in some markets, people prefer a certain cut of the chicken. But what it does do for us, it provides us with a really good signal of what we may be able to export to wealthier markets. And the more we export and we get scale production, the more we're able to bring down the unit costs, which enable us to provide affordable products also in the domestic market. And as we do that, more consumers will, we hope, switch to poultry as a preferred form of protein in their diets. Honorable Mbuyani raised the issue around transformation in the sector. I have asked the industry to look at a better metric in which we can see visibly, not by number of farmers, but by volume of meat, what percentage of meat is now being produced by smaller players, by women-owned businesses, by businesses in provinces that have historically not had a big exposure to industrialization, by black-owned businesses and so on. It is a bigger project, and I know that Isaac and his team will be working on that, and I'm looking forward at the next Executive Oversight Committee to get that information, which will, we build our confidence in it, in other words, it becomes more and more accurate, we may be able to put that out in the public domain. On localization and beneficiation, thanks for the support, the Honorable Mbuyani, for the efforts. You mentioned an important area that I want to highlight, which is mentoring, how to provide support to smaller players who are coming into commercial production for the first time and who have not been through all the cycles where you have high feed prices, low feed prices, high levels of imports, low levels of imports, shifts in consumer tastes and so on. And this is where the gray beards in the industry can play a big role. I do want to say, though, Honorable Mbuyani, you mentioned what can we do to protect some of these smaller players from the global value chain dynamics. And I think our job is really to expose them to those dynamics, to expose them to some of the fierceness of competition, but provide them with a little bit of support. But increasingly lower the levels of support that they must be able to swim. Let's say if we're going to build black-owned businesses that are competitive, it's going to be businesses that can survive and thrive in those markets. But to recognize that they come in without all of the advantage that incumbents, that people who've been there for many years have had. So they often need that initial support. But eventually, the industry needs to be able, and new players need to be able to compete in that market. You've asked quite a significant question around pricing of imported product and local product. I looked at some data earlier this year that gave us quite interesting insights into price movement for food products in general, not just poultry, just general food products. And what was striking is that the products that we were producing domestically was the price increases were generally lower than price increases of a number of imported products, and that our price index for food, locally produced food, was growing at a slower level than the global indices. In other words, that it made sense commercially and for consumers that South Africa had a domestic food producing sector. And that's something we shouldn't lose. More and more, I've just come from a very lengthy conversation in June at the World Trade Organization, and we asked the European Union to drop all their subsidies to their farmers so that our farmers can compete on equal terms with them. And
Europe was very insistent on their need for food security. And so they are providing enormous subsidies to their farmers. It's done also in other countries. Japan support their farmers. India support their farmers through their public stockholding measures. So the agricultural market globally is not quite a free market. It's a market where countries want to make sure that in difficult times, they also have local production of food. And South Africans expect that from government, that we need to ensure that our policies enable local production of food. On finance for small businesses, they're quite an important part of what needs to be done. And so the work that the IDC and Dalrad has done recently to launch the 1 billion rand fund is an important response to that. Honorable Burns and Namashi, thank you for the very warm comments that you've made about the collaboration by different players in the poultry industry. And I recognize that this is an industry where they, very often the interests of the parties are not well aligned. The importers and the local producers have had a history of quite robust public engagement, and the newspapers love it because it gives them the opportunity to use a headline that the feathers are flying in the fights between the producers and the importers. But for South Africans, what we want is to recognize we're never going to eliminate the different economic interests in a market economy, that they're inherent in a market economy, that they can even provide enormous strengths to society, that you carefully mediate and balance those different interests. But it's to find areas, an increasing number of areas, where the parties can collaborate. And for us, a big opportunity lies in the African Continental Free Trade Area. And as that gets switched on, we hope that the enormous energy that the import community has, that they can use that to export South African-produced poultry to other parts of the continent. And of course, as soon as we resolve some of these SPS issues, that we can also sell more poultry to the European Union and to the Middle East. We've raised the Middle East issues in a recent trip to Saudi Arabia. On the question of anti-dumping duties and the delays that we've put in place, and the value of socializing those decisions. So where there is an adjudicative decision, and anti-dumping duties are not principally driven by a policy decision by government. They are evidence-based. They have to subject themselves to quite significant and tight rules that the World Trade Organization has put in place. An applicant brings an application, they provide the evidence, any other party can come in through the ITAC process, they can challenge the evidence, they can provide alternative evidence or alternative information that the commission may not have available. ITAC then finally makes a recommendation to the ministry. At that point where a decision has to be made, these decisions are lonely decisions, but the law requires that those decisions be made, and we have to apply ourselves to the facts, to the law, and to any additional policy considerations that may be relevant. In our case, a once-in-a-generation challenge with COVID-19 that has severely disrupted food value chains across the world. So those are not matters that we would seek to negotiate with the parties. We've got to be able to make those decisions, but we will take into account the representation of the different players, and ITAC provides the forum where all the parties can make their representations. Some of the other issues that have come up, obviously, as in all industrial policy, they take place in a world that is rapidly changing, and what is striking is how more and more countries are recognizing the value of local industrialization. Yes, on food security, that's a particularly important one, but increasingly on areas of medical security, and now in the high-tech sectors, high technology is seen as a critical part of future jobs and future national security for countries. And so each of these areas are getting governments across the world to begin to use the very language that South Africa is using. Of course, with all these issues, there are always trade-offs, there are always careful balancing, and we've got to make decisions at the end of the day and work closely with social partners in making those decisions as effective in their implementation. And so, Chairperson, as I conclude, I'd like to appreciate the work that the social partners do. We will be, it's our job to put more pressure on them on increasing the level of investment, on increasing the jobs in the sector, on keeping prices affordable for South Africans, in bringing more opportunity for new players to enter the market, to bring more black South Africans, not only in poultry production, but also in that entire ecosystem. And to have the preparedness to see through the export market, because you can't switch on and switch off an export effort. It takes many years to make your first breakthrough. It takes many years to protect that breakthrough. And eventually, over time, you build that exposure in global markets that can provide additional jobs for South Africans. So thank you very much for the opportunity to highlight some of the work that has been done, Chairperson, and may I then hand back to you.
Thank you very much, Minister, for this very enlightening presentation. We note, as you said at the beginning of your presentation, that the implementation of the Master Plan on Poultry has involved balancing the interests of stakeholders, including producers and consumers, and that is not an easy task. We thank you for the work. We thank the industry stakeholders that has come to give us their view on short presentations. Thank you very much, Minister, for that presentation. We will now, as a committee, take a short break, and then we'll continue with our agenda, but we will then release the minister and the stakeholders so that we can conclude our meeting. Thank you very much, Minister, for this last presentation of 2022.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and on behalf of the department and Deputy Minister Gina and Deputy Minister Majola, if we don't see members of the committee again in committee, we hope members have a restful festive season and come back energized to take forward our common effort across different political parties and all members of parliament to make South Africa a better place for citizens and for residents. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, and your team. Thank you. So we'll break until 22:12 and resume our meeting. Thank you very much.